The views and opinions of this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Bringing you the ag information you need, this is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Well, a little bit of rebound in the soy complex. Otherwise, things relatively quiet on the market trade on Wednesday. We're still going to talk about it, though, and dive in here as we get into another episode of Market Talk. Thanks for being with us on the program. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. And yeah, overall, kind of a quiet day. We got a little bit of a rebound in the soy complex. Corn quiet once again. Found some pressure in the wheat markets. Livestock trade was kind of quiet. We saw some good follow through Tuesday from Monday's gains in cattle, but then kind of hit a wall, it seemed like, on Wednesday. Crude oil under some pressure. We have concerns rising again in the Middle East, geopolitical tensions there between Israel and Iran. So a lot of things to watch on that front as these markets, again, outside of a few different news notes, just kind of drifting here. WTI hitting some of its lowest levels since the start of the month on the day Wednesday. Also, the Biden administration talking about seeking an increase in tariffs on imports of Chinese steel and aluminum, according to reports from multiple outlets on Wednesday. So a few different things we're going to talk about on the show today. Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics is going to join us for a conversation coming up here starting in segment two. Looking forward to getting his thoughts on what's happening in the market trade. Also, we're going to take a look at news headlines coming up here at the end of the program. More updates on the farm bill potential. Could we see something happen yet this year or not? Here on Capitol Hill, we're going to get comments on that. Also, preparations underway for this year's Farm Progress Show already in Boone, Iowa, coming up in August. We're going to hear comments about that from show manager Matt Youngman on the way in news headlines here in segment four. First up, though, let's start the show. Comments and analysis from Mike Castle with Stone X, filled in for Arlen Suderman on our midday commentary on Wednesday. We talked about the grain trade with not really a lot of fresh news in the markets to talk about. Also, we touched on the energy side of the equation with geopolitical risks and a new Energy Information Administration report out on Wednesday, their weekly EIA numbers. Here is that commentary with Mike Castle from StoneX, starting with the grain trade.
No, nothing too terribly exciting here today. Pretty small moves across the board. Happy to at least see beans in the green here. We've got meal and oil both in the green, kind of holding her up there. But, I mean, overall, not anything terribly new from a fundamental perspective. Got our WASDE last week. We saw U.S. soybean ending stocks climb to their highest since 2019. Saw USDA cut exports. And with today's news of, you know, potentially slapping some higher tariffs on imports of Chinese steel and aluminum, wouldn't be a shock to, you know, not see such a friendly response from them. So that probably weakens the export outlook as well. You know, we're already a dollar plus cheaper on a delivered China basis, you know, compared to South American soybeans. So overall, just nothing too terribly friendly from the demand side. But, you know, happy to take a nickel to the upside whenever we can get it. You know, other than that, kind of main focus here on the weather, obviously. In the swing of planting season now, made some good progress over the weekend. Saw the U.S. corn crop, you know, essentially double, now sitting at 6% planted as of Sunday. You know, better than the average, kind of a bit ahead of schedule start for some states. Eastern Belt kind of a little bit behind. They've been a bit wetter. You know, still plenty of scattered chances of rain in the forecast here over the next couple weeks. But kind of too early for the market to get too worked up about that. We've seen how much quicker we can get the crop planted now compared to years past. So, you know, with insurance deadlines still a good ways out, not going to sweat that too much, but obviously going to keep a close eye on forecasts over the next month here. Speaking of that, we do expect to kind of stay dry across the plains, and it's been kind of that hot, windy conditions that's really dried things out. So we saw U.S. winter wheat conditions take a percentage drop week on week, now at 55% good to excellent. That's still in really good shape overall. Most of that is on the strength in the Eastern Belt, which again has kind of been the case the last couple of years. It's really the plains where we saw the drops, you know, Kansas, Oklahoma, because of that kind of hot, dry weather taking its toll. But again, in a lot better shape than we were the last 2 years with that kind of drier west, wetter east pattern. It's kind of, happening again here in the last couple of weeks. Big jump in soft wheat conditions across the eastern belt has kind of offset the drop we saw in the plains. But overall, I mean, again, same story we've kind of been talking about where things are still pretty heavy here. Plenty of wheat out there in the world. But keeping a close eye on, the plains conditions here. Yeah, the dry weather has helped get corn planting going early in Kansas. But, if we stay too hot and dry, we could kind of weaken off that crop. Russia, same story. Their winter wheat areas could see some rain in the near term, but pretty small areas, kind of the far south of their winter wheat production, has rain chances. Other than that, they're looking to stay very dry as well. That's something also worth keeping an eye on. And I think I mentioned last time, a lot of severe flooding in Russia and Kazakhstan spring wheat growing areas. That's still going on. Will probably take quite a while for that water to subside. So kind of keeping an eye on what that damage looks like. They've still got a while before their planting season, but again, kind of a story we could be touching on here in the future if things kind of stay the way they are. But other than that, really nothing too terribly exciting to touch on the grain side of things.
Energy markets with some of the concerns in the Middle East, Mike, and I know as well we got a new EIA weekly report out on Wednesday. Any notes for us on the energy side?
Yeah, we're lower today on the crude side of things. Kind of have some push both directions, like you mentioned there. We did see, some responses from Israel here today. It does sound like they're planning to retaliate both to the, weekend attack from Iran, which, the market was kind of hoping for a more muted response, hoping that escalation was kind of going to cool off there to avoid a more, widening or regional conflict or, a more direct conflict between Israel and Iran. British Prime Minister was there today, a handful of other diplomats as well. They're essentially thanking them for the advice, but saying they're going to, do what they intend to do, kind of look out for their own interests, that kind of thing. So that's just keeping some amount of geopolitical risk present there if we do see a response. But on the other side, we saw U.S. crude inventories climb on this morning's report to a 10-month high. It's kind of been just a continuous story here. We keep seeing U.S. crude inventories build over the last few months. It was a larger than expected one yet again. So that's kind of helping push things lower here, but obviously can't fall too far with those geopolitical risks present. On the other side, the refined products, gasoline, and distillates both saw a much stronger draw than expected. So pretty sizable demand there. But overall, with that building crude kind of taking a breather here, and especially with, just how strong the crude market has been here in the last few weeks, pushed up to, a pretty considerable high here and now just kind of falling back slightly, but, still not, where we were in months prior.
And once again, good thoughts there with Mike Castle from Stone X filling in for Arlen Suderman on our midday commentary on Wednesday. You could find that. We release that wherever you get your favorite podcasts on the Market Talk feed. Typically every midday, you can get a few quick hit notes about what's happening in that day's market trade. Well, coming up, we're going to continue the commodity market conversation. There are a few different things we want to dive into with Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics. He will join us as we recap Wednesday's action and dive into the fundamentals of some of what is happening in this market trade. We will get to our conversation with Mike Zuzulo coming up after the break here on Market Talk.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Well, we saw soybeans got back a little bit of Tuesday's losses. Corn was quiet. Wheat under pressure. Crude oil down over 2% as well on the day Wednesday. So We got a few different things of note to talk about and what was otherwise a somewhat quiet market day. We're going to go through things, though, and get some perspective. Joining us now, Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics here for our market analysis. Mike, thanks for being with us, as always. I'm going to start with energy. Crude oil seemed like it was the biggest loser on Wednesday, and I wasn't surprised, I guess, with the action in crude oil. I know we got the DOE numbers out Wednesday were a bit more than expected, yet all the tension in the Middle East has me, you know, worried about what crude could do if Israel retaliates against Iran. So I guess let's start with what's going on in crude, Mike. What are your thoughts with Wednesday's action?
Yeah, I think that's a really good place to start, Jesse, because, you know, we've talked a lot about in the last several months the idea that the crude oil and the wheat market are very closely aligned with one another from a standpoint of how the funds think about this market. And that if we want a market rally by the funds and the cause to get the funds who are very net short the grains out of a net short position, I've always had the mindset that it's got to be a wheat-led and therefore energy currency-led market. And today is a kind of a clinic on that mindset. And coupled with what you said, exactly right, WTI and RBOB crude, WTI crude and RBOB unleaded gas were the leaders to the downside, along with European natural gas and wheat. Those were the top four to the downside percentage losers on today's trade. And what that says to me is the market went into a risk-off mindset in the midst, as you say, of a very hot geopolitical situation in the Middle East where crude oil and wheat were bought with both hands last Friday. So they bought the rumor on Friday, sold the fact on Monday, and then we got fresh IMF data and fresh Chinese GDP data Monday, Tuesday. Mm-hmm. China saying they grew over 5%. IMF saying they're improving world growth versus their update from about 2 months ago. And so we're seeing these markets give way. What is causing this? And it's going to be a flimsy reason. I acknowledge that, but I really think that the reason we went risk off on the middle part of the trading day today was because the Biden administration initiated a triple a point to where they're going to go ahead and put more tariffs on steel with China. And what mm-hmm. I mean by triple is they're currently at 7%. They're saying they're going to go up to 21%. And I think with the interest rates already high and the Fed now walking back the idea that they're going to cut rates, then this U.S.-China trade friction being ratcheted up, I really think it took a hit in the commodity markets and the funds doubled down on their positioning. And the reason I'm stammering so much today is because we're really in a vulnerable spot now with these funds, unfortunately.
Well, and thinking about crude as well, pulled up a monthly WTI chart on our video feed that you sent me. First of many charts we got to look at here today. And kind of echoing some of those sentiments, I mean, as we look at crude overall, what stands out to you on the monthly crude chart right now?
The biggest thing that stands out to me is the trend line that we are now beating up against with new monthly lows today. That's a trend line that's been tested three times now, and it's been tested going all the way back to February of this year. And that is a trend line we don't want to take out right below the current lows from today. And I think this will match up a lot with some of the trend lines that we'll see in some other charts that we look at today. The other thing that I would add to this is the idea that as I project in this chart, if we have a wider regional war, I think the crude oil market can go above my overvalue 91.51 area, 91.50 area, and head up towards the 115 area. I'm going to stand by that. And so because of that, and because of the increasing likelihood that this Middle East will get worse before it gets better, I'm going to suggest to you again, like I have the past few months, that it's really the crude oil and the wheat that need to lead this market higher. And if they break down technically, I think we've got to get some paper positions in place to cover us to the downside.
Let's look at the Bloomberg Commodity Index. We have a couple charts on that, a couple different correlations that you shared with me there. And we look at this quite often. Any notes here as we think about this crude wheat lead market? Any notes that stand out to you in terms of the Bloomberg Commodity Index? I'll pull up this chart first.
Yeah, blue line is the Bloomberg Commodity Index. The purple line is the MSCI Emerging Market ETF. And that tends to run very closely in sync with the Bloomberg Commodity Index. And this makes sense because a weaker dollar takes pressure off emerging markets. Emerging markets can buy more and import more commodities, and they have a healthier economy. What we have right now is almost the exact opposite because of these inflation numbers coming through and some of the other economic data that's coming through, that the Federal Reserve is not going to start cutting rates. That projected the bond yields back up to fresh 2024 highs in the 2-, 5-, and 10-year yields earlier this week. And that then created an environment where the trade got sour on emerging markets because of the strong dollar following those bond yields higher. We've talked about this a lot. This chart shows you, though, when you go back to 2010, 2011, look how much in sync these markets typically are. If you want a major high in that Bloomberg Commodity Index, you typically got to have the emerging markets running full tilt. So having said that, today, as we went on the air, the dollar started to turn lower because the trade in its risk-off mindset, in my opinion, started to buy U.S. treasuries. And when you buy treasuries, you automatically push the treasury yield down. And then that takes the shine off of the U.S. dollar. So the story is not completely written yet. But I think coupled with that WTI chart that we just looked at, we're really in a situation where we need to see the dollar peak to help offset some of this negative risk-off mindset that these trade frictions and this inflation and these high interest rates are creating in the world economy. And I mean like right now. So I really want the listener and the viewer to really understand that.
Well, another Bloomberg chart. This is the more traditional Bloomberg commodity chart that you and I look at. Any ties in with that last chart we looked at compared to emerging markets here, Mike?
It really has a lot of sympathetic movement and positive relationship with the Bloomberg Commodity Index. This is the grain sub-index of that commodity index. But I think more importantly, Jesse, is the support line that we're on again or getting close to testing again. It looks almost identical to the crude oil support line in terms of importance and the opening up of the downside. And if I were to show you a hard red wheat monthly chart right now, it would look a lot like this Bloomberg Grain Commodity Index monthly chart. And this is where the rubber hits the road. Crop conditions this week went down in Kansas and Oklahoma. We're now 5 points below good to excellent levels that we were at the 1st of April. Colorado and Kansas. Oklahoma is down about 13 points from the 1st of April, good to excellent conditions. We have enough weather underneath us and enough fundamental supply-demand issues from the WASDE report last week. Wheat should be leading the market higher. The geopolitical tensions, the Black Sea issues, the port, Chernomorsk port is still shut down by Ukraine because of the heavier fighting that's going on right around Odessa. And so you've got fundamentals that don't match up with what's happening in these charts unless you take a step back and look at it from a fund-led perspective and the fundamentals they look at. And this is that fund versus fundamental mindset. So what I'm getting at, bottom lining it out, if we take out that crude oil support and we take out this support on the Bloomberg Grain Commodity Index, my clients and subscribers are going to get a text blast immediately to recommend getting puts bought in corn and in beans and really pushing hard on the soybeans because it's still profitable in the new crop and in what little old crop I have left. But I've already got the puts picked out at this stage of the game.
Well, once again, we are being joined here today by Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. Great thoughts. There's definitely a lot going on in these markets that we need to pay attention to. We're going to continue the conversation coming up here after the break as well. We're going to talk a little more in the grains. I want to get some thoughts on a couple things I'm thinking about in soybeans, wheat as well. And we want to go over to livestock trade. We got some interesting cattle charts and correlations to talk about here on the show today. Looking at some of the closes on Wednesday, May corn down 3/4, 4.30 at a quarter. December corn down 2.5, 4.64 at 3/4. May soybeans 4.5 higher, 11.49 at a half. November beans up 2 3/4, 11.61 at a quarter. May bean meal up 3.40 a ton, 3.38.70. May bean oil up 9 points, 45 even. May Chicago wheat 12 3/4 lower, 5.37. May Kansas City wheat down 14 3/4, 5.72 3/4. May spring wheat down 5, 6.33 at a quarter. Quietly mixed in cattle and hogs. We'll look at some of those closes and continue with Mike Zuzalo from Global Commodity Analytics on the way right after this.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
The views and opinions of this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
We're joined today by Mike Zuzalo from Global Commodity Analytics here on Market Talk, and great points, and I want to echo some of that sentiment more here in the grains. Let's pull up our HRW July historical charts on the video feed to kind of continue that thought of this wheat-led market, whether it's up or down. And KC wheat, Chicago wheat, under the pressure, we alluded to that earlier on the day Wednesday. What are some things you're seeing right now on this HRW chart, Mike?
Yeah, this is kind of the final say in everything that we've talked about, and I won't belabor the point, but this is the 2024 July HRW. The purple is 2009, the yellow is 2015. Look how similar going into the beginning of April we were to 2009 and 2015. And it was in right around April 24th, 25th that these two markets really diverged. And the 2009 market went up, made major highs by the time we got to the Memorial Day time period. And then the 2015 market did the exact opposite, started, you know, went down and made major lows by the time we got to the 1st of May. This is the chart that I'm going to be watching very, very closely. And I'm hoping we're similar in fundamentals and price action as 2009, and the hard red wheat just flat out takes care of business and starts to head higher and puts a lot of this negativity that we're talking about today behind us. But if we do fall off the cliff like we did in 2015, you've lost your main leader there and you've lost your crude oil leader by most likelihoods. And this is why this is the chart that I put up for the analyst like me and the producer client like I deal with. It says, well, how much lower could it go? We're already in the tank. Well, this goes back to you don't know how much lower it could go with the way the funds operate right now. And so what we did in 2015 is we took this price essentially from a 570 level all the way down to 490. And the hard red wheat chart actually shows about a 60 or 70 cent move down if we lose the support lines that we're talking about.
I want to throw this at you as well as we kind of wrap up our grain discussion. Just on the soy side, corn to me, corn was kind of a dud. It's a follower right now. Not much market movement this week in the corn side. Beans, though, you know, we had a down day Tuesday. Wednesday largely kind of felt like a dead cat bounce to me in a way, Mike. To your points here today with watching crude and wheat, I feel like the soy complex itself has got maybe a little more to lose here if something breaks to the downside, Mike.
Yeah, it's got the meal market underneath it right now, and it looks very healthy in the meal on a weekly basis on the charts. And I think that really speaks well of the meal, especially given the poultry still getting HPAI in states like Michigan, which was reported again, I think, last night for another flock. But I think you're 100% right. Can beans really do it alone with a reduced export number from USDA last week? Can they really do it alone on a 340 million bushel carry-in now? And can they really do it alone with USDA looking a lot more right than wrong with some of the private estimates coming out recently, actually coming close to the Brazil soybean estimate that USDA just gave us. And I think this is where Argentina remains, and this is where the meal comes back into play, I think, Jesse. Why would meal be rallying and looking so good? I really think it has to do with Argentina. I think it has to do with the leaf hopper issue. And if that's the case, then the corn can only be tighter in terms of supply in South America. So as I said to another person I talked to today on the media, I see corn as having the best suit of cards. The only problem with the corn is it's attached to the weed at the hip. And I think that's really the bottom line. But that's why I'm doing paper positions in corn, especially because I really don't want to throw in the towel on the cash side, because I really think we're tightening up on both the domestic and the world supply levels at this point.
Definitely want to remind folks, of course, that risk of trading futures and options could be substantial, but a lot of things that we have to take note of here in those grain markets. Let's go to livestock here, Mike, and I'll pull up a correlation chart with the S&P 500 and cattle. Pretty quiet day Wednesday after we found some good strength in cattle early in the week. So what are some things you're seeing here, correlations standing out to you in this cattle market right now?
Yeah, I think the latest news headlines have given us a chance in the live cattle, especially, to find new weekly highs. And we've been able to build a base, and we tested some downside on Wednesday. We were able to recover, though, pretty nicely. Feeders are also supporting from a standpoint of the corn market weakening with the wheat market. And I think lastly, Jesse, the Chinese came out with updated pork production numbers. I want to say their Q1 production was the lowest in three or so more years in terms of actual production of pork. And so it's a very welcome situation. There's less competition, less likelihood that the Chinese will come in and sell in out of their reserves and cheapen up their pork prices in order to keep their economy going. The problem, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was echoing what you said. No, sorry. Continue on there, Mike.
Yeah, the problem that we have now is the stock market, and we'll take a look at a couple charts here, but I want to show the correlation between the S&P 500 and the live cattle on an 18-week basis. We've looked at this a couple times already in the past, but it's still roughly plus 80%. So there's a very high relationship and price relationship, especially between cattle futures and the S&P 500 futures. And I think we need to keep that in mind, especially in this environment where the dollar has just gotten done making fresh 2024 highs against a lot of major currencies. Look at the Japanese yen. We're literally at the highest level in dollar since 1990. What's that going to do for our beef export pace? So that's a real critical feature to this market.
Yeah, let's another S&P 500 monthly chart here as we shift away from the cattle correlation, just kind of continuing that sentiment. I've largely felt that these livestock markets outside of the news cycle have been very tied at the hip here with the financial markets as of late, Mike.
They really are, because the consumption patterns are very similar. When you get good consumption and inflation data, it's usually related to the food and the restaurant eating. But we've also started to see some weakening and some issues underneath the current, so to speak, or underneath the surface. And what's important about this relationship between cattle and the S&P is that now we've taken out the March lows in the S&P 500, which also takes you below the February highs. And so you've taken out a trend line, you've taken out the previous month's lows, and you've taken out the previous high set back in February. So you're really opening yourself up to more downside. And if I looked at this chart and didn't know anything about any market whatsoever, I'd be looking at that 2022 high up there around 4,800, wondering why aren't we going back and testing that high now that we've lost all these technical support features. So we've got to keep that in mind with the cattle. And the reason I bring this up so much, Jesse, is because the profitability in the cattle market right now is so upside down. We are bleeding red at this point, and it goes back to the futures curve. And that's what we're looking at here is a live cattle futures curve. You're looking at from April all the way to August of 2025. And you notice that the prices go down into August and then they start to build. And I pinpointed December, and that's because I've been talking to clients that have been buying 6-weight feeders. Yankton, South Dakota actually had a sale today. 650s went for $309, 694 steers went for $296. you look at this forward curve and the December futures price at 180, you're taking a bath for about 12 to 13 bucks a hundredweight when it comes to where your break evens are. Your break evens are really at 192, 193 based upon the model I use and the calculator I use to market those 6 weight feeders in the month of December. We've really got to be careful here. If the feeder cattle and the fats start to open up to the downside because of the S&P 500, again, I think floors underneath you is really, really an important thing to consider.
Mike, great stuff as always. Let's wrap up our conversation and reiterate to folks here again, just a lot going on, a lot that we have to keep our fingers on, our eyes on, you know, keep the pulse on things here, even with a busy planting season in front of us, et cetera. So what would you reiterate to folks here as we're watching the markets mid-April?
I'm still looking for a better second half of April for corn and beans to get hedges in place, Jesse, as long as the wheat and the crude oil don't tell me I'm wrong. And if they do, I'm going to take it at face value.
Fantastic. Well, if folks want to reach out to you as well with questions, they want to look at your analysis and more, I know they could find you online very easily. Where can they reach you, Mike?
Yeah, globalcomresearch.com, globalcom with two M's, research.com, important place to go for product services and also a free trial. But as you said, there's a lot of risk in commodities, and we see it on a daily basis nowadays.
Globalcomresearch.com is where you can get your questions answered by Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. Mike, always enjoy the conversation. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Jesse. You too.
Once again, Mike Zuzulo there with Global Commodity Analytics joining us here on Market Talk. Always good to talk with him. Let's look at some of the closes again. I didn't get to livestock at the end of last segment, so let's start there. Live cattle, April, down 60, 180.90 on Wednesday. June live cattle down 40, 175.32. August down 15, 172.77. April feeder cattle, 7 higher, 240.42. May feeder cattle down 70, 240.27 on the day Wednesday. We look at some of the summer feeder contracts as well. Pull those up here real quick. Feeder cattle for August down 22, 252.12. September down 22 at 253.37. May hogs 20 higher, 94.92. June hogs down 10, 102.72. July hogs up 27 at 104.30. August hogs up 47, 102.07 on the day Wednesday. In the cotton market, more pressure there. May down 173 points, 79.56. July cotton down 176 points at 81.33 on the day Wednesday. Looking at the grains again, mostly mixed action. May corn down 3/4, 4.30 at a quarter. December corn down 2.5, 4.64 at 3/4. May beans 4.5 higher, 11.49.5. November up 2 3/4, 11.61 at a quarter. July Chicago wheat 12.5 lower, 5.52 at a quarter. July KC wheat down 14, 5.69. July spring wheat down 5 3/4, 6.39 and a quarter. All right, coming up next, we'll take a look at ag news headlines here on Market Talk right after the break.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. Thanks for sticking with us here today. Always good to talk with Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics. Appreciate him joining us here on today's show. Let's look at news headlines before we run out of time today. Well, House Ag Chair G.T. Thompson's push to move a farm bill next month, if successful, could help jumpstart long-stalled Senate committee action. But there are still doubts. Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley is still pessimistic about chances for a new farm bill this year. But if House Ag Chair Thompson does get bipartisan agreement in his panel on a way to fund farm safety net improvements, Grassley says that could break the logjam in Senate Ag.
Yeah, if it was something that, I suppose in this case, it'd be something that Republicans could agree to with the funding. And I assume if Thompson came up with something that House Republicans agreed to, it'd probably look pretty good to us.
But Grassley still predicts Congress won't pass a new farm bill until next year, though he hopes otherwise.
What's going on in the House of Representatives is very unpredictable. So I wouldn't want to make a speculation on what the House can do, but I would hope the House would pass a farm bill.
But Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack told top GOP Senate Ag Appropriator Senator John Hovind of North Dakota that doesn't guarantee agreement on his plan to boost support for higher crop insurance levels.
There's a conflicting set of messages coming out of this Capitol on crop insurance. I think we need perhaps some consistency in the approach here. Would be helpful.
Well, we prefer our approach.
Well, I'm sure you do. But there are 166 members of the House Republican Caucus that feel that crop insurance should be cut.
House Ag Chair Thompson is focused instead on limiting the Secretary's Commodity Credit Corporation spending authority, while Vilsack says CCC could be used creatively to fund a farm bill and disputes the claims that USDA has abused the fund. Well, the first case of highly pathogenic avian influenza is now confirmed in Minnesota. The USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service confirmed the first 2024 outbreak in Minnesota in a Meeker County flock. The current outbreak, confirmed on April 11th, has affected just over 70,000 birds. Meeker County saw four outbreaks in commercial turkey flocks in 2023. Earlier this spring, the Minnesota Board of Health issued guidance for biosecurity measures to help all poultry owners in the state. Shauna Voss, the senior veterinarian for the Minnesota Board of Animal Health, says, quote, "Poultry owners might be used to us sounding an alarm on HPAI this time of year and talking about how biosecurity can limit the impact of this disease. This year, we're taking a new approach, and instead of highlighting one disease, we're highlighting one solution for many diseases, which is effective biosecurity," end quote. Since 2022, the virus has affected 88.11 million birds nationwide. Well, America's farmers and ranchers lead the way in greenhouse gas emissions reduction through voluntary conservation efforts and market-based incentives. The Environmental Protection Agency released the inventory of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions and sinks 1990 through 2022. The report shows that American agriculture reduced emissions by 2% from 2021 to 2022, the largest decrease of any economic sector. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval says, quote, "The latest numbers demonstrate farmers and ranchers' commitment to growing the food and fiber America's families rely on while improving the land, air, and water, a benefit to the farm and climate," end quote. Now, AFPF's Market Intel report says U.S. agriculture represents just under 10% of total U.S. emissions compared to other economic sectors. EPA says emissions from agriculture totaled 634 million metric tons in CO2 equivalents, or 9.99% of all emissions in 2022. That's a 1.8% decrease, or a drop of 12 million metric tons from 2021. The USDA's April wheat outlook shows global wheat ending stocks for 23-24 are projected down this month by 0.6 million metric tons to 258.3 million metric tons. The agency says that's the lowest level in 8 years. The biggest factor in this month's decline is India's wheat stocks, which are forecast down 2.1 million metric tons to 6.9 million. India's government stocks estimates implied a stronger pace of use than previously expected. If this forecast is realized, India's ending stocks will have declined more than 20 million metric tons from the peak of 27.8 million tons in 2020 and 2021. Global stocks have slipped 39 million metric tons from the peak level of 297 million metric tons in 2019-2020. With China estimated to account for 18 million metric tons of that decline. Total exporter-held ending stocks have been relatively consistent over the last several years, not showing the same declining trend as China and India's stocks. And finally, preparations are underway for the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa this year. The demo fields have been planted in advance of the 2024 show.
That's one of the things that keeps all of us up at night, is making sure that that super early corn goes in the ground right on time, so that we'd be able to have field demonstrations at the end of August. And you know, looking back at 2022, the last time we were in Boone, we didn't get that corn in the ground until May 19th. But fortunately, it was all in the ground. I got the text at about 11 o'clock on Friday night on April 12th that all the field demo corn has been planted. So we're in about as good a shape as we can possibly be setting up for a Farm Progress Show.
And that's Farm Progress Show manager Matt Youngman. He says conditions have been dry in Iowa, seeing some improvement, though, this week with some rainfall. Youngman says also the show is going to be meeting with vendors and exhibitors this week.
Well, if you can imagine, you know, the planning for the show, it's a lot more than just showing up the day before and parking some machines and then off you go and have a show. There's a lot of background planning and a lot of work that goes into folks' exhibits. You know, there's a whole lot of eyes and a whole lot of attention on the event. So we like to have an open house every spring, and that's what we're going to have this coming Wednesday. We call it our exhibitor vendor day. And what that means is we invite our exhibitors to come in, and we'll have all the vendors there. So it gives them the opportunity to physically go stand on their lot and point fingers at stuff of what they plan to do and have their tent company, their electrician, their landscaper, their pressure washers, the fuel vendor, anybody they may need, their air conditioning vendor, to be able to have a plan and write down some things and measure things off and make sure everything in the plan is going to work for all the vendors. So that's always, you know, planting corn and that exhibitor vendor day are the two big milestones in the spring as we kind of start to make plans. And we have other exhibitors that are planting crops on their exhibits and doing a lot of that kind of thing. BASF is putting in a big plot inside the bounds of the exhibit field this year. And so a whole lot of planning, and we kind of have to have some components of the exhibit field laid out here in April so that folks have what they want when August comes around.
And this year's Farm Progress Show is going to be held August 27th through the 29th in Boone, Iowa. Looking forward to being there as well for another year of the Farm Progress Show. Well, with that, we are out of time here on Market Talk today. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day.